Hi, my name's Elijah, and welcome to my podcast, Songwriting for Songwriters. This week, my guest is Sam Brown. Sam's song Stop was one of the biggest hits of the late 1980s, and she's a unique songwriter. She's also been a session singer, working with huge bands like Pink Floyd, written with Jules Holland, and worked with many, many other great artists. She's back now with a brand new album, her first in a while, and her first after she sadly lost her voice. We spoke about her new album, her recovery from the loss of her voice, the story behind her huge hit Stop, what it's like to be a woman in the music industry, growing up as a songwriter with successful musical parents, and drawing inspiration as a songwriter from being an observer, and much, much more. So please enjoy this podcast, subscribe to the channel on YouTube, and thank you for being here. Okay, joining me today on my podcast, Songwriting for Songwriters, is Sam Brown. How are you, Sam?
I'm very well, Elijah. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. It's a bit early for me, but I'm good. I'm good. Generally, I'm good.
Well, you are a musician, to be fair.
Yeah, that is true. It's late nights and early mornings sometimes don't mix, but I'm very, very grateful to have you on the podcast. You've had like a really amazing career as a songwriter and as an artist and as a performer, but it's been a few years since we've heard new material from you. Number 8 is your new album, which I had listened to last night, and it's incredibly good. It's it's quite different from what we've heard before from you, but it's a fascinating listen, actually, and it sounds very modern, very cool. The melodies and the songs are there as we would expect it to be from you, but it sounds slightly different from what I've heard before, like a slightly different aspect of you as a songwriter. So I'm really interested to know why these songs, and like why now, and how did that come together, and how were those songs born into this world?
Right. Well, no, where do I start? First of all, thank you very much. I'm glad you had time to listen to it. So in 2007, I lost my voice. Well, I had a bit of a breakdown sort of leading up to that, and my voice was fine. I was still doing loads of gigs with Jules, and I've always worked very hard, which I've really loved. But I think I possibly pushed myself a bit hard. And anyway, my voice went, and I've never been able to discover what's wrong with it. So I really can't sing professionally. I couldn't get on a stage and do a gig. I mean, I sing with my ukulele clubs, but that's really just to lead them. And it's pretty rough by my standards, to be fair. So I think because I couldn't sing, I found it very difficult to be creative. I found that writing was incredibly difficult without my voice. And I suppose there's an emotional aspect as well, which is that, you know, the sorrow of losing your voice kind of takes away the impetus to write, you know, whereas it was just second nature always to me. So during lockdown, the wondrous time of change for everybody, my friend Danny Shogger, who I've known for a very long time, said, let's try some writing online. And I kind of knew it was going to be difficult, but I think having someone there who's such a good friend and also an amazing musician and someone that I was used to writing with who knew me very well was just the perfect solution to that. So we started writing, and it was, to be honest, it was a bit shit when we started, Elijah, if I'm honest. And then we sort of got to the third song and started to get better and started to get into my stride with the lyrics and stuff and started really enjoying that. And then I put it into Melodyne. I started to do vocals, which was really quite upsetting because I can't sort of sing long notes, or, you know, I can't sort of hold a tune. If I go for a note, it doesn't come out. It comes out flat and I don't get closure on my vocal cords. So It's quite a frustrating process. However, when I put the new songs into Melodyne and in the track, it all really came together. And it was like, actually, this isn't so different. It comes from a different place for me. You know, it's much more, I have to be much more cerebral and pragmatic about putting it together. But when it was tuned up, it was like, oh, actually, that sort of still sounds like me, you know. So we did it. We wrote an album, loved writing it, rediscovered, you know, a real love for me, and thoroughly enjoyed the process. Sometimes doing the vocals was upsetting. There were tears, but I kind of just was very sort of matter of fact about it and just said, well, I'm just going to sing it. I'll put it into Melodyne, put the notes where I want them to be. And if I could get through that, like any emotional experience, you always come out the other end, don't you? That's yeah. basically what it was about.
Right.
Am I waffling?
No, it's a really, this is the deeper the better. This is really fascinating. It's one of the things, you know, a question, the close harmonies you're doing in that range are really great. And it sounds to me, it reminded me a bit of Fiona Apple, actually. And her album, I can't remember the name of the album, Someone Bring the Bolt Cutters, I think it's called, but also a little bit of Morcheeba. And I loved your voice and what you've done with it. And it sounds like very much like a kind of, not otherworldly, but there's a kind of uniqueness of the sound, of kind of the synth areas and the vocals and the way you've done them. It sounds like a very well put together and unique sound in itself, you know. So I think the vocals have come out really strongly in that way.
Well, I really enjoyed doing it, and I think discovering, because I love harmony, you know, I love working with harmony. I love, if I ever got my voice back, the thing I would want to do is to sing with other singers. It's not to get up on stage and be the lead singer. I really don't give a toss about, I mean, I love it. I really love it. But that whole thing of the focus on one person, excuse me, is, you know, it's quite one dimensional, isn't it? You know, when you get, when you get a group of people singing together, it's just incredible. It's the most amazing feeling for the singers, completely selfishly. So to me, that's really what I miss the most. So to be able to put those harmonies together, and in fact now possibly with a view to actually singing them live with other people who I know sing brilliantly, is, you know, it's opened up a world of possibilities that I'd sort of said goodbye to.
Yeah, that's brilliant news. I mean, it's a fantastic album. I really enjoyed listening to it. It's really cool. Did you feel like if you hadn't written for a while as a songwriter, when you came back to write songs again, did you feel that friend, the songwriting muse, was there? Like, was it quite, it must have been slightly strange to go back to something you've done so much and being so good at, to come back to that. Was it a comfortable thing to go back into writing? And did you feel like you had something different to say?
It absolutely was comfortable. It was like the proverbial getting back on the bike. And you know, writing is the thing that I did first. I wrote songs before I sang, really. Yeah. I mean, I used to sing the songs, but I didn't consider myself a sort of lead singer. So I love writing. And I think it was the combination of rediscovering my creative self through songwriting and realizing that I can still write.
Yeah.
And it was good for my confidence, because obviously with the loss of my voice, I felt like I'd lost everything, but of course I haven't, because there's always a positive. And I think as far as the lyrics go, a lot of my lyrics in the past have been about, I suppose, about how I felt about my life.
Yeah.
And what I've discovered as I've got older, and this sounds pretty harsh, I know, but no one cares, you know. I think people relate to songs where emotions are discussed, and you know, they put themselves in that position. So prime example for me is stop. Is like, up till that point I hadn't written anything like that, because it was a story rather than coming from me as part of my own experience. It was a story about a love affair. It wasn't my own personal experience. So that was really interesting, and I suppose I saw that, and I saw how people related to it. So perhaps from then on, my songwriting became an amalgamation of those two things, of storytelling and my own experience, rather than just my own experience.
That's really interesting. Stop is one of those. I mean, I spoke to a few people this week just saying, you know, I'm starting a new podcast, and I mentioned your name, and within a second, the people started singing Stop immediately. Mm. You know, that's one of those songs where, you know, there's not many songwriters in the world who have that experience of writing a song where people just, or songs where people just can sing it off the bat. You know, it's like a very kind
true,
of
actually.
amazing thing. I mean, that's a very powerful communication to have, isn't it? To have a song which is so well known and soundtracked people's lives. Is that, what was that experience like to have that kind of major hit as a songwriter?
I think now, and you know what you're saying is really interesting, and I'd never thought of that actually. What I do know is that for a lot of people who've had a hit that has stayed with them for a long time, they are irritated by it. There's a very short period of time where I was with Stop, but I did promote it for 3 years solid, so that was kind of understandable. But really, on the whole, I love the song. I think it's a good piece of work. I think I was very lucky to have written it. You know, I mean, it really, I mean, you know, you're a songwriter. You start writing a song and you're following an idea, aren't you? You're following a path. And you're following a vision of this, of something that you want to communicate to people. And so Stop was a sort of left turn for me, but it was also a really good lesson. I'm thrilled that it's still going, because quite frankly, I couldn't have got through the last, well, whatever it is, since 15 years without the financial support of it, with the royalties. Not that it's massive, I'm not rich, but... You know, when you're a single mum with two kids and you lose your main job, that was very useful. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Stop. I'd like to say thank you, Stop. Thank you. Sure. I appreciate you. But as far as, I don't really consider myself different to anyone else, Elijah, if I'm really honest. I think I was very fortunate in that I grew up in a musical family, so people were slightly interested. I was taught that music was a viable job. You know, I was taught that my mum and dad both earned money from music. So that's what I saw when I was growing up. Yeah. And you have children, you know, they follow that path. They see it and they think, okay, yeah, I want to do that. Or no, I don't want to do that. I want to be an accountant, but it affects them. So I think I'm very lucky in that. And I was always, believe it or not, I know you've seen me with a ukulele club going oi oi and playing the fucking kazoo, but basically I am quite a quiet, introverted person. When I'm at home, I like being on my own. I like my own company, and I was always like that. So I just love to sit at home, play the piano, and write songs. And I'm very lucky. That's what I did. I moved into London when I was 17. I got a job as a waitress, job as a cleaner, and stayed at home and wrote songs all day. Didn't have any boyfriends, wasn't interested. Knitting and writing songs. That was it, really.
Growing up in such a musical household, and obviously, like as you said, your parents would have had an influence, but was there a moment where you decided, or do you remember the decision process of thinking, I am going to be a songwriter, you know, that's what I'm going to commit to? Do you have memories of that time, thinking that?
I never made that decision. I just followed the path I was on. I mean, I suppose subconsciously I must have done, because I left home when I was 17 and I moved into London and I rented a piano in a very small flat in North London and I just wrote songs all day. That was what I wanted to do. Obviously, I was also very lucky because I was already doing session work then. So I had, I was building that up and phoning around and building myself up as a session singer. And I had a couple of other jobs, and I don't remember actually making the decision. I think I just always did it. I just did it.
Yeah.
And interestingly, my son is the same. He just does it. He's realized as he's got older and he's had to get his own place that he also has to have a job. But it's so much harder now. I mean, you know, I think it's much, much harder for young people to do music.
I think also there's a lot of people writing, isn't there? It's quite a lot of... saturated market, I suppose, in some ways. But I think the word that really shines out there is love of doing it. You know, that's in my own experience. It's the one thing that I, you know, outside of family and friends, it's the one true love that I just go back to and will always go to, because it's just that experience of writing a song is so exciting and beautiful. What's your experience with your muse and how a song arrives for you? I feel like it's a bit of a slightly mysterious process without getting too lofty about it. But there's a kind of connection with something outside of the everyday, which fascinates me personally. How do you feel about your relationship with the kind of creative muse that you experience?
I think you're right. I think that it's, I read something on Facebook recently that my friend posted, which was, the gist of it was, you know, do something new every day, have a new experience, do the things you're not supposed to, take a chance on things. You know, if you think you want to jump in the river and have a swim, just do it. Don't think about it. And I think that one of the things I've really noticed since I lost my voice is I've become, you know, I've resorted to routine and structure to get me through difficult emotional times. But actually, I think that becomes, I can't think of the word right now, but you don't need it anymore after a while. And it's difficult to walk away from routine and structure. But what I see when I teach is that is exactly what people need in order to be creative in any way, whether it's writing, thinking of lyrics, finding the right melody for a song, playing an instrument, learning an instrument. That's the thing that we are, as songwriters, are fortunate enough to have, that people who spend their lives leading a normal life don't have in their lives. And you can't teach it to people. You know, it's like finding that space in your head. And I think you're right. It is possible for it to sound lofty, but the fact is you need the space in your mind to be able to see the beauty or the ugliness around you, whichever it is that you want to write about. You have to have that space in your mind. So you have to say, look, everyone sod off. I'm writing. I need to be in this space. I need to go and sit in a forest because I need nothing. You know, I need to just be alone with my mind. And I think really that's probably what it is for me, is I need to be alone with and in my mind to write, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a space to kind of just take everything in and just express what you're feeling about the world and just give it back to the world, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, and the world's such a busy place now, isn't it? I mean, really, I feel like I need the rest of my life to stop, do nothing and absorb everything that's happened to me so far, because, you know, I just feel like I'm racing through it, you know, casting things aside and trying to hold on to the things that are sort of whizzing past me. You know, I think lockdown was an amazing thing to have lived through. And I think in history, it will become apparent, because I'm sure that right now people are documenting all of the different psychological elements of lockdown, negative and positive. For me, it was incredibly positive because I didn't have to go anywhere. I didn't have to do anything. So I had the space.
I agree. I think if you were creative, obviously outside of the tragedy of COVID and everything, but the lockdown, when if you were a creative person or if you were an introvert, you were quite well prepared for it, because you can sit down and write and use the time, and actually having to do anything other than that can be quite a distraction and sometimes fairly traumatic in itself. If you're blessed with the ability or gift or have developed a practice where you can be quite happy at home writing, like we wrote loads of songs during lockdown. I think we're at 56 songs, just kept on, just committed to doing it, and
fantastic.
Just really enjoyed that time to do it. So totally understand what you're saying about that having the space was a luxury, wasn't it, to have that time?
Yeah, because I mean, for me, I think I'm probably quite a neurotic person, and I love life and I love the richness of life. I love going to the supermarket because I know I'm going to meet someone new. You know, I love walking up and down my road because I can see what's going on in people's worlds, and I really like that. But all of that requires energy, and for you to observe something and for you to take it on board and think about it. I mean, everything that you do, you have to process, don't you?
Yeah.
Whether it's making a cup of tea or, you know, where you put your spoon down when you make, I mean, I know that sounds a bit bonkers, but everything we do involves so much of ourselves and other people and our environment. I mean, it's massive, isn't it? I remember my son saying to me, he was about 9, and I can't remember what he was asking about. I said, the thing is, I said, what you're seeing there is one thing. I said, but underneath that, there's a whole other load of things. And these are the things, you know, if you do this, then it involves this and this. And he went, no, stop, stop. He said, there's not enough room for all of that in my head. I can't accept that, you know. And it really made me, it sort of validated that idea that everything we do has so much experience in it, doesn't it?
That's, you know, also very, I wonder if, because I relate to what you're saying there about when you just the idea of moving a spoon and the impact of where you put your spoon and you observing that as a,
but it's, yeah, what a kind pair of ponces we are.
I know, but it's quite abstract in a way, but it's quite, I mean, obviously it's, this is maybe part of the songwriter's mind or a creative's mind, but I really resonated to that, like the importance of where you, it's not that putting a spoon down is important, but what you're saying is you're witnessing and observing reality. And I don't know, because I'm nothing other than a songwriter, if people who don't write or aren't artists don't observe in that way, but you've just summed up a way of observing the world and taking time to process, and that it all has a bit of an impact, good and bad. I wonder if that's something which is not necessarily unique to writers, but we are in a way observing life, aren't we? And observing people and witnessing things. Because I always feel slightly like I'm half in the room and half not in the room. I'm present, trying to be present, but part of me is just taking in people's conversations or like things I'm looking at. And I'm trying, and my brain is almost trained to observe and try and find some kind of idea for a song or some words, so it feels like it's on all the time, you know, in two ways, being there with life, witnessing and observing as well.
Yeah, no, I think for what you've said, you know, I mean, that's a lot of songs to write, as you said, through lockdown, and it sounds to me like your writer's brain is probably permanently switched on. You know, and that you are constantly looking for ideas. I think, you know, lyric ideas are, see, I don't do that. I live my life and then things come to me. And right. I think, oh, that's an idea for a song, and I write it down. But I'm not consciously thinking about writing.
Okay.
When I consciously think about it, it's that I find ideas come to me very quickly. Usually when I'm driving, I find it very good for my songwriting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I mean, I know that this podcast is about songwriting.
Yeah.
And I think that songwriters are a particular breed of human, in the same way that you can spot a drummer a mile off, can't you?
Yeah.
You know, you really can spot a drummer. And, you know, they have characteristics about them. And yeah. It's like all drummers have those characteristics. And it's the same with singers, obviously. You know, how do you know there's a singer at the door? You know, they haven't got the key and they don't know where to come in. I mean, I think actually there is a great deal of truth in that idea. But I think it's more, for me, it's akin to art. I think, broadly speaking, music is art. And I think that that has been roughly stolen from musicians by things like X Factor and The Voice, where the goal is not to immerse yourself in your music and do the best work you can, in the same way that a carpenter wants to make the best piece of furniture that he can. The object in those situations is to be famous, is to excel to the degree that your success is measured by money. And money's got nothing to do with music for me. I don't do it because I want to make money. I mean, come on, you know, who would? It's just not going to happen, is it? But I do it because I love doing it. And also because I've been doing it for over 40 years. And I like it. I like feeling good at it. And I like taking the world and filtering it through my own sounds.
Awesome. You've collaborated a lot with lots of different people, and what's the joy or the challenge of collaboration for you with another writer?
Well, it depends on the writer, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure.
I think going to the my most recent writing has been with Danny Shoger. And he's a keyboard player, and a pianist really is his main thing. And I love working with him because I come up with, so I've got a little, I bought a little vocoder keyboard because my brother suggested that if I had a vocoder, I could then play the notes I wanted to sing, which was a genius idea.
Cool.
Unfortunately, you couldn't really hear what I was saying. So it kind of didn't work in a professional recording way, but the keyboard, I can't remember what it's called now, but it's basically like a retro style thing with all these bonkers sequence sounds on it. And so basically the whole idea of doing sort of 80s electronica album just came from that little keyboard. Plus I love sequenced things. I really love it. I love that whole thing of something rolling on and on and on and building on, you know. And Danny is amazing because he took those ideas and he just made them work really quickly and instantly. And it was a very, he'd be sort of worried and saying, oh no, I don't know, maybe that's not going to go. Like, no, just go with it. Let's just go with everything we think. Let's just take every idea as a positive idea. And we did. And we sat and wrote the lyrics together and the collaboration worked because I think we listened to each other. Some people I can't collaborate with because they don't really want a collaboration. You know, they want, I don't know, they don't want a collaboration for the right reasons. They want it to be their thing, you know. And sometimes I feel like that, in which case I will write it on my own. You know, because I can. But if you collaborate, for me, it's about really bringing out ideas from each other and inspiring each other to come up with stuff that the other person likes. Is that, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes sense. It's, I mean, one of the things that I think you made a very good point there actually, which is worth people thinking about if they're songwriters, is if there are times where you're writing a song, which is your song, it's not a collaborative song. And to have the awareness of that and actually go, actually, I'm going to write that one. You know, that's for me. what about working with, I didn't actually know that you'd written so much with Jules Holland. Was that, I didn't actually know, to be fair, this is my ignorance. He's obviously like a brilliant musician and an artist in his own right through Squeeze and a broadcaster. I wasn't quite aware of the kind of amount of writing you'd done together and how, and him being a lyricist actually as well. I wasn't quite aware of that.
Well, I think Jules is I mean, he's a very interesting man. He's very kind, and he loves art in all its forms, and he has an insatiable hunger for all things creative. He loves art, he loves music, he loves you know, art, literally just anything that's to do with art. And I think that explains his sort of very diverse enthusiasm for all things, because most musicians or presenters will go on, oh, we're not having that on the show, that's rubbish. You know, Jules would never say that. He might say it doesn't really, hasn't really got anything about it that is pulling me in. He might say that, but he would never judge it, you know. And we wrote very well together. We had a laugh. We used to do writing. So every year we go to Holland because he really wanted to do gigs in Europe. But of course, he doesn't have the same kind of audience. So about, I think, seven or eight of us, a smaller version of the Rhythm and Blues Orchestra, would go out to Holland. And at the end of it, Jules and I would stay on and he'd have a piano in his room and we'd literally just write for a few days. And Jules is very practical about writing. He, well, first of all, as you said, he's very well read, much more so than perhaps people would think. He's an incredibly intelligent person, and lovely, really lovely and kind. And we'd just stay on. And I remember once he said, oh, I really want to write a waltz. So we came up with Valentine Moon. That was our waltz. And I sort of had a little idea. And play it to him and he'd play it. And then, you know, literally just very typical songwriting. What about this? Oh, yeah, hang on. What's that? E flat. What's that? Blah, blah, blah. Play it on the piano. I said, yeah, what about, where should we go from there? I'm like, well, maybe here. No, what about this? You know, literally just that. And we knew, and the lyric needed to be romantic. So we kind of started out with, we just wanted to tell this little story, which was old fashioned and not necessarily a kind of about, you know, a young glamorous love, but was quite homely and romantic and long, had longevity about it. And so that was Valentine Moon. But we got on very well, you know,
beautiful
writing together.
Yeah, so it's a partnership songwriting. It's when it clicks, it's a very beautiful thing, isn't it? When you have that space and understanding and knowing when to lead and knowing when to listen. And, you know, there is a balance to it. It's because, you know, I've always been basically a kind of solo songwriter. But since lockdown, did a lot of co-writing and writing with Ava now in the Gravity Drive. And it has changed things. You know, it changes your way of thinking as a songwriter, I think. So that's been a good process for me to collaborate. So it's interesting to hear your thoughts on that. It's a good one. But growing up, your parents being so musical and also very successful in the world, you've spoken already that it gave you that idea that you could go and do that. Were they supportive of you as a writer? Did they give you any advice as a songwriter?
I'll explain myself in a minute. They weren't there a lot of the time. They were both on tour and working most of the time. We didn't see our parents a lot when we were growing up, especially as we sort of got into teenagedom, you know.
Sure.
So when I started writing, really, they weren't around that much.
Right.
I did play one of my first songs to my dad, and I wrote it in 7/8, and he said, put it in fucking proper time and it'll be fine. So, you know, I think basically I hope swearing isn't a problem, Elijah.
No.
I think basically he thought I was a bit out of my own arse with it, and you know, I should be writing a nice good old fashioned classic country or pop song, you know. But my dad is very he's great. He's actually a brilliant writer, my dad.
Yeah.
But he's never had the confidence to do it, which I think is really sad.
Okay.
He's a really good lyricist. He's written songs, but he's never kind of, you know, really. I mean, I consider myself a songwriter.
Of course,
I don't think he would consider himself a songwriter.
Right.
But
so yeah, there is a difference when you decide to call yourself a songwriter. Like, I don't think I'm a musician. I think I'm a songwriter. I can play music, but there's musicians who are masterful people. I'm just writing songs, but it is a different tag, isn't it? It's a different different way of putting yourself across, I think.
Yeah, I think you have to have an aptitude for music. I mean, I feel the same way. I think the only instrument I ever really excelled in was my voice.
Yeah, sure.
And I felt very confident with my voice, and it was an amazing experience. Once I started vocal training in 1995, and it was the single best thing I ever did for my singing. And I advise anyone who's listening, who's a singer, go and get some good voice training. It is absolutely worth it. The rewards are enormous.
Yeah, sure.
But you know, I play a bit of everything. I play a bit of bass. My first instrument is piano. I love the piano. And I play a little bit of bass and a little bit of uke and a bit of accordion. I've just bought a flute in a charity shop the other day, which I'm quite excited about.
That's cool.
So, yeah, but I think writing, I don't know about you, but I find with writing, sometimes if you pick up an instrument that you can't really play, it's quite good for writing a song on, isn't it?
Absolutely. I always love that thing that John Lennon said about, well, you know, I'm an artist, so I can't play tuba, but if you give me a tuba, I'll get something out of it. And I always think that's a really good way as a writer to think that, you know, just, well, okay, I can't play, you know, sometimes I put guitars in tunings and just, which I don't really know, and we'll pick it up and a song will come out of it because it's different how you might go to write normally. So picking up a flute, again, is a great idea because it will bring another element out, won't it? As a writer, you'll find some accidentally or spontaneously, you'll find something.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I've got so many, I bought this, key, can you see it?
Yeah.
That orange thing. Yeah, it's a Bon Tempi.
Okay.
And it literally just does one sound. But as soon as you play it, it makes you feel a particular way. I'm not quite sure what that is. But, you know, it's fantastic. It's so bonkers. It's very 70. I don't know if it's, I don't know how old it is, actually. Anyway, it's like an accordion. It's kind
okay,
of like
cool.
a, yeah, in a way, the setup. So you've got chords in the left hand major and minor chords, and then you've got a normal piano keyboard, which is the basis of an accordion. So I play a bit of accordion as well, not very
well.
That's
awesome. Sam, when you were in your room writing songs and in, you know, on your own in your sort of teenage state of mind, what influences or what songwriters or writers were impacting you in your initial stages as a songwriter?
Okay, so I think Stevie Wonder, Kate Bush, Joni Mitchell, Randy Newman, they were the main ones for me that were writers that I considered, you know, were writers I loved. Ricky Lee Jones, I really liked.
Yeah,
I think that's probably it. I had an album by Thelma Houston, which was written by Jimmy Webb. And that was really a big influence because it was an orchestra, but it really had a fierceness to it as well. You know, it was, the album's called Sunshower. It was an amazing album, and it appealed to me also because Thelma Houston at that point, she wasn't in her Don't Leave Me This Way phase. This is 1962 and her voice is just stunning. It's amazing. And I thought, wow, you know, that's incredible. I listened to a lot of Aretha Franklin when I was a kid as well.
Yeah.
But Thelma Houston was just, she never had the same sort of success as Aretha, but you know, if I had to sort of describe her, she's like a cross between Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston and Eva Cassidy, if you can imagine that.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's just an amazing voice. So yeah, those people.
And was there anyone that was important or impactful or influential on this new album as writers or songwriters?
Not that I could name. I never really had a television. I've never been very interested in television, but my boyfriend watches quite a lot of television, and we tend to now, whereas I've never done this in my life before, I mean, I've been with him for 15 years, but I watch more television than I ever have done. And I've really noticed and been very much enjoying the sort of 80s sequenced electronica kind of atmospheric vibe of a lot of the television series, you know.
Okay, cool.
And I think that's been quite a big influence, actually. I think it's very difficult now to write. It's difficult to write new things now, isn't it? So I think it's quite, for me, it's quite important to have a vision of what I want to write. And I started, before I started writing with Danny, I started to write instrumental electronica pieces on my own. So I'd already started going down that road and I really liked it. And I liked the idea of my writing now being juxtaposed with what it used to be, which was very authentic, very real, very get up and play it, which I love, but I can't do it anymore. You know, I could play something, but I, as you said, you know, I wouldn't be as good as other musicians and seems a bit pointless when there's so many great people out there. So, yeah, so that was a big influence, but I've got to be honest, I couldn't tell you anyone's names. Sorry.
No, that's cool, because I mean, I think sometimes actually what you're saying, TV shows, ambient influences are kind of as important as, like, you know, the big songwriting influences you have as a kid, which don't leave you. They structure your way of writing in a way. But you could, that it's nice to hear you talk about that in terms of the album, because it does have that cinematic, ambient, electronic thing going on for it. And then some of the most beautiful parts for me is when the piano, kind of classical piano parts almost, come in and meet that world.
Yeah.
And you know, you also give your songs and these songs some space to just exist towards the end of the song, if you like. The music can exist, and I really enjoyed that space you chose to just allow the songs to kind of not be, I think, you know, as writers, sometimes you kind of go, or you're told to go through the, you know, through the kind of history of writing a pop song is like 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, you know, hit them with a hook, verse, chorus, hook. And it's all about, it's almost like a mechanical kind of guidebook on how to write a song. But it was very good to, not good, but very kind of interesting and fascinating to hear you kind of allow space in those songs as well. It really works.
Yeah, I think Thank you. There's, I mean, you know, my life's quite simple. A lot of that comes from my partner, Tiernan. You know, he said, oh, you should really do an instrumental album. And actually, when I start listening to music that I love, a lot of it is just instrumental. I love cinematic orchestra, for instance, and I think, interestingly, you write your best stuff when you're not trying too hard. It's like anything, isn't it? If you go to learn some kind of dance, it's only when you really know how to move and you let go of it that you actually start to have fluidity and grace in your movements. And I think it's the same with music. Is you, if you're trying too hard, you can kind of hear it. Mm. Although actually this album, it was quite good because it was like, well, first of all, I don't care. That sounds terrible, but I don't really care what people think of it. I know I'm going to get, now that I'm putting myself out there, I'm going to find out what people think of it. But I really hope they like it. But if they don't like it, that's okay. Music's not for everyone. We can't, you know, we can't make music for everyone. It shouldn't be for everyone. There's so much of it out there. It's subjective. I know that my Auntie Mary doesn't like the new album. She's terrified of telling me, but I can just tell she just doesn't like it. It's fine, Auntie Mary. It doesn't matter. You know, it's
that's
okay.
It's a good point, though, actually, because I think as a writer or songwriter or an artist, you have to quickly get to the understanding that you've got to kind of have thick skin, because not everybody's going to like it. And sometimes people who don't like it or won't say anything are the nearest and dearest, you know? And sometimes the people that say the most or most enthusiastic are complete strangers, and it balances, you know? So you can't put too much on either one.
No, I don't think you can. And I was going to say something and I forgot what it was. But, you know, I remember. I don't know if you ever experienced this or if any of your listeners or watchers have. But I remember going, you kind of write a song and you think, I think that's quite good, actually. And you do your demo and you put all your little bits on it and everything. And then you'd go into the record company and they'd play it on some speakers that you've never heard before. And you'd think, oh my God, this sounds awful. This is not how I felt about this yesterday in my living room. And I think what happens is you hear with other people's ears. Yeah. And I think, I don't think it's just me. Is it just me, Elijah?
No, you not do, at all. Don't you? I've had it with my own band. You know, the reality of the song being played out in front of other people, like hearing it with their ears, is very different from you being in your own space about it. And there's been times where I've played songs to people and they didn't really, they were indifferent, didn't give much. And it ended up being the tune or one of the tunes that is played a lot on radio, you know, so you never really know. But I think it's really important to develop your own sense of what you think, or tuning your own sense of what you think is good and bad about what you do. Because the tendency is to think that everything is good. So you've got to kind of find that truth, you know, and listening through other people's ears, like you said, is a very helpful way. It doesn't mean you have to necessarily agree with what they're saying or their indifference or love of it, but I think it helps you as a writer to see and hear the song being born around people and getting a sense of what it actually is, you know?
I think that's true, and I think that's very true, and that's right. I also think that, you know, it doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, nothing's that important. We're all just specks of dust at the end of the day, as George Harrison said. And, you know, it's all right. It's okay it's okay not to like something. I think it's really important that that's out there, because not only does it give everybody permission to have their own view, but it also makes space for someone else, you know, for someone else to be the thing that they love. And it's not a competition, and it's not the best. It's what's right for you. I have learned a lot about songwriting from my son as well.
Okay.
This doesn't particularly apply to what we're saying now, but I meant to say it before. In that, you know, he's beautifully free of the rigid structures of songwriting that I grew up with, and I suspect you did, because as you said, you've got this, you know, you've got a time and you've got, you know, verse, maybe intro with a hook, verse, chorus, or you might go mad and start with a chorus, you know, whatever. But something Mo does, which I think is quite common in modern music, is he'll do however it starts, and then you have a verse and a chorus. And then the second verse will have an entirely different melody and meter and maybe some different chords. It won't be different completely. You know, it will key into the song, but he'll just go off. And I think modern writers do that quite a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So, for instance, they might have a rap over it with like a kind of a ghost of an idea of the first verse in it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think that's, I do hear that. The structures are slightly different, aren't they? They're not traditional repeat, photocopy the structure thing. There is more a kind of cooler freedom. I love that, that you know, your song's teaching you a lot about songwriting. That's very, very good to hear that. Let me just cycle back quickly to George for a second, because your family knew George. And when I was 6 years old, you mentioned, you know, we're just specks of dust, nothing really matters. And that's the funny thing about songwriting, because we think it, when we're doing it, we think it's really important, but it's not, it doesn't really matter at all, you know. When I was six in bed, I was listening to Sergeant Pepper, and within Without You, one of my favorite all-time songs, came on. And George, bless him, is like, everything he said in that song just completely resonated as a six-year-old, and it resonates now, you know, in my late 30s, and it resonates when I was 18. He had this way, I think, of just being quite tongue-in-cheek, but kind of saying, you know, nothing really matters at all. You know, it's like, it's all just a bit of a passing experience.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know exactly. I know you sang on his records, and you performed amazingly at concert with George. As a friend, as a man, as a songwriter, what kind of influence and impact did he have on you?
Well, first of all, I have to say that obviously Nothing Matters is a massive, huge, sweeping statement. And of course, things do matter. And also, I do think, sorry, I know I'm completely contradicting myself here, but I think music and songwriting is incredibly important in the world. I mean, I don't know about everyone else out there, but my whole philosophy for life came from songs, you know. It comes from those ideas in songs. Yeah. Love's in Need of Love Today.
Yeah.
Randy Newman, just some fantastic, sardonic, lovely lyrics in there. So it does matter. But I think maybe it's like, you know, it's like with art, once you've done it, you've done it, and that's it. It's done. You have to put it out there for the world. So that's my kind of view on that.
Yeah.
Going back to George, I wasn't bosom buddies with him, but we did get on very well. He was a very down-to-earth, ruthlessly honest person, but also with a very gentle spirit. And I knew him. He was a friend of my dad's. My dad and he used to play music together. And my mum had known George since the 50s because my mum was in a sort of singing, dancing troupe, and she met George a lot. And the Beatles supported my dad before they were famous. Amazing. Which is quite funny. And there's a very famous picture of George who, when they were supporting dad, I don't know where it was, George snuck into my dad's dressing room and had a picture taken with my dad's guitar. I think it's a 335 Gibson 335. I can't remember, but yeah. And there's this picture of him and Olivia, who I keep in touch with, threw an 80th birthday party for my dad, and she had this picture blown up and put up in the restaurant where we were.
Nice.
So I did a few bits and pieces of singing for George at his home, and also with Jules. We went out to Italy in his last few years because he Horse to Water was on Jules Holland album.
Yeah.
So we went out to record the vocal where he was staying. I can't remember, it was in Italy, I think. So yes, I did know him, and he was lovely, and he had some fantastic attitudes. And you know what? He was just a bloke. He was somebody whose music is out there and is fucking incredible. But I think he would be the first person to say that he's a bloke. You know, he's just a bloke from Liverpool. And I think that's really an important attitude, because you've got people vying for attention and recognition and acknowledgement, but that's actually nothing to do with music. That's about themselves.
Yeah,
and I think George was about making music, loved making music, loved playing music, loved joyfulness and loved nature. And that came through in everything he did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say about him, really. I mean, the concert for George was incredible for me because I was greeted on equal terms by all of these successful men in the music industry.
Right.
And I think Anushka Shankar was there, and she also was revered on that gig, quite rightly so. She's amazing. But, you know, in that world of those old blokes who play guitars, there aren't many women up there, you know, there aren't many women up there with them. I mean, there are fantastic women, of course, Joan Armatrading, Joni Mitchell of the same era.
Sure, but it's a rare, I know what you mean. It's a rarer thing from those times. But it's quite interesting now because I think women, as a fan of music, I think women are writing way more interesting work. You know, I find the people that I listen to generally are women. And actually the first few podcasts have all been with women. It's just a pendulum swinging, you know? And you can hear it in your new album. Yeah. It's again the same thing of like, you know, I don't want to be generic about it, but you men have had a long time to say a lot of things and had a lot of attention. So it's interesting, especially, you know, having a grown up daughter, it's interesting to hear and learn what the female experience of the world is, you know, and it not be about their experience of men all the time. It be about the feminine perspective in all areas of life, you know. And again, I can hear that on this album, and that's what really, you know, aside from the world of the music and the melodies, which are brilliant, it's what you're saying is really interesting, you know. Marionette, the things you're saying, and Doll, it's like, you know, you're saying something as well, you know. It's not just beautiful music, it's something's been said, you know, like you said earlier about it's not X Factor, get me famous, I'm an artist and I'm saying something, and that's got to be it, isn't it? That's the whole.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel I should say that the music industry, in my experience, has not been a welcoming place for women. You know, it's the music industry has been particularly fond of a particular type of woman, which I wasn't. I've always been way too outspoken and sworn too much, and not really up for wearing six-inch heels. Not that I've got the figure for it, to be honest with you. I think some people can do it. I'm not one of those people. But I think now, as you say, the pendulum has swung. And so we're getting a glut of all sorts of different female artists. And that's, again, I think, as it should be. And it will probably even out. But it was hard as a female singer-songwriter. I mean, A&M Records did not present me as a singer-songwriter. And that's what I was. But it wasn't how they saw it, you know. They didn't see it that way. They saw it as, oh, this is a hit record, we'll promote this in this way. And all the marketing had nothing to do with who I was. You know, it wasn't, how do you see this, Sam? How do you see this working? Can you make this work? Because you're going to be the one on the road for 3 years promoting it. It was none of that. It was, oh, God, what are we going to do with this? You know, and I remember going to a photo shoot and the makeup artist said, oh, God, your skin, I don't know. Oh, well, I'm going to have to pluck your eyebrows to start with, you know, get rid of all that. And it was literally, you were just a piece of meat in there for them to make into whatever they thought they could make work. And the whole thing of having a stylist as well, you know, someone said that to me, I'd say, fuck off, I'll wear what I want to wear. It's got nothing to do with you. I don't care what other people, you know, I mean, mostly I look like a loony. I've got to tell everyone who doesn't know me very well. But
well, I love the images that I'm seeing you put together for the new album and the quirkiness of them. It's like from you know what I know of you, what you're putting out in terms of imagery is like, that's Sam, you know, and that's
well, Yeah, and you have seen me in my most basic forms, Elijah, teaching ukulele in a pub to 10 people on a Monday night. So, that again, I'm just a person. But actually, just to go on to something completely different, and
Go for it.
also, I suppose, a very female thing, the I always resented the fact that I wasn't included in the marketing of myself. But I think that marketing yourself is not to be, I think it is important, really important, but I think it's important that you do it. So you have a vision of who you want to be. And that's often when I'm teaching, and I say to people, this is your opportunity. When I do gigs with them in theatres, this is your opportunity to be the best version of yourself you can be. And I think that's, if you're getting at speaking as a performer, that's really important. And really, a really healthy, good thing to do is like, well, so many people say, oh no, I couldn't possibly wear that. I don't think, what would Vera think of that if I wore that low cut top? Wear the fucking low cut top. Get your tits out. Come on, you're a woman. You're gorgeous. Put it out there. People love it. Makes other people happy. And it's not just men it makes happy. And it's not just about your boobs. It's about the colors you wear. If you want to wear pink and orange, wear pink and orange. If you want to wear tartan and polka dots, do it. If you want to wear a feather boa to the Tesco's, wear the feather boa because everyone around you will smile and
I
it will
think you're
make.
so, I think that's absolutely right, and I think that's true as a songwriter. If you want to say something, say it. If you want to wear something, well, I remember for me, like deciding to wear nail varnish was like a big move. And
Yay.
it was like, I'm gonna cross that line and wear nail varnish. But it was almost like, because I came from a background of like a northern dad, and that was a definite step towards artistry. Like, I'm gonna do this because, and I think that you're right, that whether you're playing a ukulele and an open mic, or whether you're hitting a big stage, if you can make sure your art is authentic to you, and that what you're doing and marketing is authentic to you, I think then it's about your divine spark of expression, isn't it?
It is. That's a lovely, lovely phrase.
Brilliant. Sam, I'm going to ask you one last question, which I ask everybody, but it is a bit of a it, the question will be different from minute to minute, day to day. But if there's a song in the world that exists that you didn't write, which you live in your own head, or a song you'd wish you'd written, can you share with our listeners what that song might be?
Wow. That's like going to take some thought. Okay, I'm just going to pick one out of the hat, but
Yeah,
I
go
have to
for it.
say there are so many for me. And it is Joni Mitchell's song, which Crosby, Stills and Nash did, which is, I think it's called Woodstock, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are
Beautiful.
stardust, we are golden.
Yeah. What
That
a beaut
one.
that is such a gorgeous song and record.
It is a gorgeous
That
song.
Sam, good luck with the new album, and thank you so much for your time. And just let us know where can people find you? Where should they look to find your new work?
Oh, okay. So I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, and they can get the new album, which is called Number Eight, is on Amazon. It's in HMV, only as a CD at the moment, but the downloads will be out in all the usual places. And you can also get it. It's a bit more expensive, but I will sign it for you and post it off. You'll have my spit on the envelope, and I haven't got COVID, at misssambrown.com.
Brilliant. And viewers, watchers, check it out, because it's a really fascinating piece of work. It's really good. So thanks, Sam. Thank you for your time and for your insights into the world of songwriting. I really appreciate you being on the podcast.
Well, thank you for asking me. It's lovely to speak to you, Elijah.